Well, if y'all are ready, as some of you know, we always try to have discussion times during this prayer time if there's a current event to deal with. And I was thinking it's kind of dangerous because I'm always talking about being reactionary. And like, so then you're always asking, like, well, how do we react to this and this and this? So we try to devote some time to put some text up underneath it then and not just be caught up in the back and forth on Facebook or whatever it may be. But so this week there's been the shooting in Baton Rouge. Of course, the one that happened in Dallas, and then there was one in Minnesota. And these aren't really new. I mean, really just a few weeks ago, there was the one at the gay man, you know, which has already kind of faded out of everybody's mind. We moved on to the next. So it's really been a lot of them. And at first, I really didn't know what to say. Some of it seemed so simplistic, you know. Well, do you kill somebody? No. But I sat down this morning and I kind of had an A.W. Tozer on the train moment. There was a time where he wrote a whole book. It like the whole table of contents just kind of fell in place when he was on a train ride. And so as I thought about this morning, I don't know how this is going to go. This could be a whole hour sermon, or it could just be a rock skip across it and then we talk about it. So I don't know what I'm going to leave out and what I'm going to include and how much time for discussion we're going to have or not have. I'm just going to try to model, as I've gleaned from all kind of sources and tried to do as much research as I could. That's a struggle as a pastor. Like, you really need to be a PhD in everything. And so here's what I would say. I would say there are at least 10 words that should mark a balanced response to this. Number one, responsibility. So by this I mean we should just react like everyone else is reacting. So people are blaming one side or the other or both sides or partially one or the other. So nobody hears of a murder. This is my point here. Nobody hears of a murder and says, oh, it's quite all right, you know, pass the potato chips. Everybody thinks somebody's at fault. Somebody did wrong. Somebody needs to be held accountable. And so we need to hold to this idea of responsibility. Now, we're going to get into not just generally reacting that way like everybody else, but when it starts to divide, when you get down to the specifically aspect of it, like, well, should I be a Black Lives Matter guy or a Blue Lives Matter guy or All Lives Matter guy, or should I be a guy that thinks this is mostly a cop issue, mostly a black issue? Or can I be both? Can there be some fault on both sides? Or so we'll come back to that. But Genesis 6, if a man sheds another man's blood, then his blood needs to be shed. So that's just responsibility. The second word that I think should mark it that comes right from that is validity. And I think I should take this time to make the point that the Bible is true based on how everybody's acting. Nobody is acting like it don't matter if anybody's brought to justice and we're all evolved pine scum anyway, and stardust. And so, you know, we're not really worried about who's to blame, like everybody. So the fact that people are even arguing on Facebook assumes that, like, the fact that I would quarrel with Randall would about something would assume that there's a universal law that he and I need to submit to. Like, I'm assuming that he knows it, I know it, and it's what C.S. Lewis called the universal law of fair play. And so, just the fact that it's good to notice this idea that all men know right from wrong. And this is a good time to see it. They're all acknowledging it. By the very fact that they're calling someone what you did is wrong, they're assuming there's a universal law that we all ought to submit to. Another thing, as I would point out, is this is a little bit philosophical on you, but it's good to point out because this is a good time to get philosophical, is that they're all observing the law of non-contradiction. So this is logic. So nobody's acting like you're not to blame and you are to blame at the same time, right? Everybody's acknowledging that either you're wrong or not wrong. Either you did it or you didn't do it. Either it's this guy's fault or it's not this guy's fault. So everybody's acknowledging that, which means everybody is, again, the moral quarreling assumes the universal law of fair play. The logical quarreling assumes universal truth. And neither of those makes sense without an omnipresent God who is both logical and righteous. That's why everybody's acknowledging that. And so I think it's good just to point out here that there is what's called in theology the sensus divinitatis. That's the classic word, the sense of deity. Again, C.S. Lewis wrote about it in Mere Christianity, so it's not just some high thing. But the sense of deity is the sense of truth, in the sense of morality, in an absolute, inescapable sense. And it doesn't make any sense that all men would have it except that there is a logical God that exists and that he's righteous. And so this gets into the doctrine that it proves that man's made in the image of God, that he's logical, that he's righteous, he's meant to act like God. And that's the indicative truth about who a man is. The conscience is that indicative truth in imperative mode, like knowing I should act like God and knowing when I don't act like God. So we all know it's not okay to be illogical. It's not okay to be immoral. So validity, that should be one. So you can go to Romans 1 and 2 for that. The third thing, I think, is dignity, which that leads to that. So that this is validating it because man has these logical and moral self-evident truths, which comes from the fact that he's made in God's image. So dignity should be a response. And so what I mean here is the reason you hold man to responsibility is his dignity. So Francis Schaeffer, who is a Christian philosopher, he tells a story, and this happens a lot, of a guy by the name of Richard Speck who killed a bunch of nurses. And his psychologist argued in court that he could have no more avoided killing those nurses than just eating a ham sandwich, and he tried to make that argument. Well, the problem is when you do that, you reduce that man down an animal. And so that's just not acceptable. We all know. And so it's the dignity of the fact of who you are. So we can't avoid responsibility because of the dignity. So we dare not take the worldly idea that, you know, these people's shoes were too tightly tied when they were kids, and therefore they don't know right from wrong. And even Romans 1, the most debauched people to ever live, it says they know the ordinance of God, that those who do such things are worthy of death. And so I think dignity should be there, but also keeping in balance, pity. Again, based on the same thing, that man is a dignified person, pity should be there. For example, the shooters, the fact that a person gets to the point of despair that they literally get in a window and snipe out people, we should pity that soul that it got to that point. That gay guy, there's been rumors that he didn't really feel accepted in the gay community. There's been some discussion, I don't know, it's possible that he didn't feel accepted at home because he had like a super religious dad that was like really, really against that and didn't offer any kind of like room for talk and discussion. And we ought to like, you ever weep about that, that someone felt so unaccepted and so out of place and went to such a depth of despair that like the fact that the image of God has gotten to that place is a ground for weeping. And when you watch that video, that man, I mean, that man's arm that got shot in Baton Rouge is twitching, his nerves like a lizard that he just killed. I mean, that ought to just, and you just see that guy dying, you don't know if he knew Christ or not, and just the image of God just wasted right there on the concrete. Jesus said, blessed are those that mourn. Like it's a mark of a Christian that you just kind of get beside yourself about what's happening. And so, you know, you have the example of Jesus. When they're crucifying, he just feels sorry for them. Like, look what they're doing. They don't even know what they're doing. And so the fact is, you know, how do you hold these two things in tension? You know, man's responsible. So you feel like if you're holding him responsible, then it excludes having pity, but the Bible has both. And so somehow they go together. It's like many things. And my point is, though, it's there, the responsibility and the pity is based on the dignity of man. You know, it's okay for a dog to act like a dog, but when a man acts like a dog, it's a whole nother issue because of his dignity. And you don't care if a dog says something to you. If they could talk, you wouldn't care. But when a man says something to you, it hurts because of his dignity and because of your dignity. And so, which again goes back to the validity word, which people are acting like they are dignified. They're acting like they do have truth. They're acting like they do have morality. So they're acting like God exists and that they're made in His image. So it's just a good thing to point out, because in other times, what happens is someone's used this, Jeremy found a guy one time used the analogy of the noodle in the pool, like suppressing the truth, Romans. Well, these are times where the noodle pops up. And it won't be long, trust me. And like I said at the beginning, we already forgot about the gay shooting. Within a week, your Facebook news feed will die down. People will go back to what they're doing. The noodle will go back in the water. But right now, you see it come up. You know, like when an atheist gets in a wreck and a car is spinning, he cries out, Jesus, the noodle came up. Well, then when it's all over, it goes back down. When the plague stopped, Pharaoh's like, okay, I'll go back to my other way of life. And so, but it's good to see it right now, that it's there, that it's up, that they're acting like the Christian worldview is true. So, That being the case, pity leads to my fifth one. I think humility should mark our response. I think of Jonathan Edwards, one of his resolutions. He says anytime he sees some horrible deed that someone did in the world, is to put himself in that position and think, you know, but for the grace of God, there go I. And you know, the fact is, let this hit you. According to the Bible, you could have been in that window shooting people. And the only reason you weren't is God didn't let you go that far into sin. Hitler used to be a nice, moral little kid, like one of these other little kids, just running around playing with his toys. He didn't come from the womb with like looking like Chucky. And he came from the womb looking like a normal human being. And actually, there's been accounts after what happened in Germany of people having court cases. This is another one. Charles Leiter tells this story. there was like a 60 Minutes. Back in the day, that was a big thing. It was a 60 Minutes interview. And where one of these officers from the army there was going through trial by some Jews, and a lady who was there who survived the Holocaust but was there at the court, and a guy, so they were there, and when this man, this former officer, when he walked in, like there was this eerie silence, you know, at the collision between him and those people. They hadn't seen each other since then. And one of the people hit the floor and broke out in gut-wrenching sobs as soon as they laid eyes on him. And in the 60 Minutes interview, he asked why. And he said, because when I saw him, I saw he was just a normal person. And so there's something more horrifying than if all men had horns and tails. And what's really horrifying is that normal people can do these things. That man made in the image of God can fall to this state. And that's what that person saw. They said they saw themselves in that other person, and that man was just under the influence of this evil in the world. And so I think humility, you put a text under it, 1 Corinthians 6, such were some of you. Romans 9, unless the Lord had left the seed, we would have all been like Sodom and Gomorrah. So if you don't think you could have ever been a homosexual, if you don't think you could have ever committed the sin of bestiality, you're proud. That's a sin in the Bible. And according to the Bible, God kept you from doing it. And if you have a higher view of yourself, then you have too high a view of yourself. You could have been Hitler. You could have been the gay guy. You could have been that depressed that you shot people. And if you don't have, then no wonder you're not saved. And no wonder you haven't called on the name of the Lord, because you don't know you're sinking. And so that's one of the things that when God convicts someone, they all become like Paul. They all have the opinion they're the chief of all sinners. So humility. Now let me get more into the political realm, having discuss the initial reaction of those five. I think another one should be civility. Trying to be a good preacher here and put TYs behind all these. If there were three or four of them, you could remember them, but 10, you're not. I don't even remember them. But once I got going, I thought, I'll just keep going. But civility, what I mean by that is, obviously, Romans 13, we can't be totally against cops, okay? We can't be absolutely against law enforcement. Because Romans 13, what does it say? Let's read it. Romans 13. We've preached through these, but let me read verses 3 and 4. These are the main two verses. It says, "For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority?" And he's talking about the cop. He's talking about the military. He's talking about the guy who carries a pistol, the policeman. Do you want to have no fear of authority? He says, "And do what is good, and you'll have praise from the same. They won't bother you at all. For it is a minister of God." So there's two kind of ministers. There's the spiritual minister, and then there's the political minister. But God wants both. So he's a minister of God. Now that's quite a thought, right? The policeman is a minister of God. One time I joked, like, every time I get pulled over, I always say, like, the minister of God pulled over the minister of God. He says, "Do what is good, you'll have praise for the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good, but if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing." It is a minister of God and avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. So what Paul teaches here is it's biblical that there be a government in place to do two basic things: to be about punishing evil behavior and promoting good behavior. Just the kind of good and the kind of evil that just kind of keeps order in society, basically. So not total righteousness. Paul's not saying the government is not trying to create this heart righteousness inside of you, but this external constraint that prevent, you know, it's based on fear, he says here. In Romans 8, you know, the Christian life, he says, we don't have a spirit of fear. Like, that's not how the Christian life is, but it's just wicked, unbelieving men, and this is how you control them. So we can't be totally against cops because of Romans 13. And we need to have some mercy on the police force. I mean, how would you feel? All this hype going on and your nerves are shot, and you pull a guy over, you know good and well every time you pull someone over, you're nervous. And then you go up to the car and the guy reaches suspiciously for something. I mean, you don't know what that feels like to be in that situation. But then again, Romans 13, take me to the next term, equity, justice. Romans 13 does not teach it's okay for governments to be wicked. Does it? It says they're a minister of God for good behavior, not of evil behavior. So it's not teaching that we're just to be okay. You know, and in America, you have the right to vote. You have the ability to try to apply these biblical principles, try to put people in office who keep, who through their policies and everything, you think will hold the Romans 13 the best. And so it's good to do that. It's good to do that for your neighbor. You know, try to help your neighbor have a certain life through by the way you vote. And the point I want to make here, though, is that Romans 13 cuts both ways. We can't be absolutely for the cops either. So I say again, we can't be absolutely against them. You can't be absolutely for them either, in terms that they have just unrestrained right to do evil things to people and overpower people. So, for example, let's turn it around. Now you're the guy in the police car, and you're a black man, and there's a white cop, and he pulls you over while you're sitting in the car, and your wallet's in your back pocket, and he says, "Hand me your wallet." Do you obey that command or not? May look like you're reaching for something else, right? You might get shot, right? And so now let's enter into the African-American mind and the struggle they may have with this, you see? So it's not, there's struggle on both sides here. And, you know, was one of those guys shot for that? I wasn't there, you know. I don't know. But could it happen? I mean, something like that could happen. And when nerves are everywhere. So we need to have, it's not an either or decision, I don't think. I think based on Romans 13, we need to try to promote good police. We need to recognize that they're not all bad. I mean, a great majority are not. And then God has a purpose for what they're doing. And you try to promote that purpose, but that purpose is in line with equity and justice. And so we don't need to be turning a blind eye to something that looks suspicious and unjust. So let me give you the last three that I want to take the opportunity to say something. I think sensibility should, and this is a new one. I don't think I've ever talked about this before, but I'm not a fan of the word race. I like Vodi Bakum on this. I agree with him. The word race is not even in the Bible. And matter of fact, it contradicts what's in the Bible. Even to use the word race is racist. Okay? So let me give you some text. How about Acts 17? Acts 17, in verse 26, it says, "And he," that is God, "made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed boundary times and boundaries of their habitation." Then you could go to Genesis 10:32. And see there that the three sons of Noah populated the whole entire planet after the flood. And ultimately, you go to Romans 5 and 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul contrasts Adam and Christ. Ultimately, everyone is a descendant of Adam. So the whole idea of race, where it's like, well, these people are descended from here and these people, is actually evolutionary ideas that's been put into your mind. They're not biblical ideas. Let me tell you the alternate title to Darwin's book, The Origin of Species. Does anybody know what it is? The main title that we know of The Origin of Species, and then most people don't even know that little subtitle, By Means of Natural Selection. But Google it and look it up. You can see it. It says right under that, or the, someone Google it and look it up. It says, I can't remember the exact, it says something about favored races in the struggle of life. What you got, Alex? Anyway, when you get it, you can tell us. This is kind of like the holiday ham thing. Like, we're using a word, we don't know why we're using it, just because everybody's been using it and it's still slow. That's okay. She'll get it in a second. But basically, it's like the promotion of favored races. If anyone else has it, you can read it. In the struggle for life. So it's part of that. It's this idea of genetic mutation and all this kind of stuff. But it's completely unbiblical. So let me give you a scenario. How about if someone says, are you an interracial church? Well, it's a bad question. So what you really should say is, no, we're not an interracial church. We only accept humans. That's the only people we have is members. Like, there may be an old stray dog hanging outside the church that wants to be a member, but we only have humans. And then what about, what do you think of interracial marriage? You think we should have interracial marriage? Like, no. We should only marry human beings. There's only one human race. And skin color and everything, it's all related to like where people migrated and everything. Ultimately, their boundaries, what Acts 17 says. And so,
I got some,
do you?
It says the preservation of favored races and struggle for life.
Right, that's it. The preservation of favored races. So, that's one place where this thing comes from. So we should have some sensibility. I don't think it's a good term to use. I think ethnicity or nationality or something like that, people group, you know, something like that's better to use than race. So anyhow, let me mention just two more. One, the ninth of these ten is sanity. I mean, I think there's a terrible assumption under all kind of people's mind. People are quoting like Chronicles, if my people are called by my name, that don't have nothing to do with the United States. God never chose America for anything. Like, they're just any other nation. They're just as chosen by God as the Chinese people. And God don't have any other program but the church. Period. He don't have this, not, there's no grace shed on America that he didn't shed on any other nation. And so I know it's not popular, but it's biblical, and Chronicles is talking about Israel. It's not talking about America. And the fact is, Paul teaches when the gospel goes out, it's death unto death to one man and life unto life to another man. In other words, it's going to constantly create a mixed society. And there will never be a day where America is a Christian nation. There will never be a day when China is a Christian nation. There will never be a day where all people are Christians until the new heaven and the new earth. And so it's just an assumption under all the patriotism, all the political hype, all, you know, if we get the right political leader in there, he can turn America around or whatever. Well, number one, America was never Christian to begin with. And it's not going to be turned around. And this is not a Debbie Downer message. I mean, this is like, this is someone telling you the truth so you don't get delusional. And it's not fun. Like, the prosperity gospel is not fun when you really buy the bill of goods that, like, it's going to go well, and then you start bumping into reality, and you get disillusioned, and it hurts your faith, and you fall into despair and everything. So it's not good for people to get their hopes up and think. So we should, let's keep our sanity. And let's remember Philippians 3. Paul said your citizenship is in heaven, from which you eagerly wait for a Savior. So not waiting on Donald Trump or Hillary or anybody to fix and heal our land. You know, if they can better carry out Romans 13, that's about as far as they can go. And yeah, we should do that. But like, surely coercing a man to act a certain way is not what we're after, ultimately. That's just a band-aid to keep society in order. So anyhow, the last thing I would say is about diversity. And I think the culture is as ripe as it could possibly ever be. People are valuing diversity. I mean, like, you can't even go get a job. It's like the billboard for hiring. You got an Asian person, an African person, like churches trying to be seeker friendly, or all, you know, you got some little kids, some older adults, some middle aged, black, white. You got to get them all crammed in the billboard sign so that, because everybody knows, like, that's a big thing. The LGBT community is a big thing. Feminism's a big thing. Black and white's a big thing. It's just diversity is on everybody's mind. And so I think it could not be possibly a better Elijah moment. What I mean by that is when the prophets of Baal tried to get fire to come down from heaven. It didn't work. It's time for Elijah to step in and get it to come down. And they've tried to get unity and diversity in all kind of ways, and it never is working. And it couldn't be a better time for the message of the gospel, that there's neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, Greek, barbarian, Jew, Scythian, slave, free, all are one in Christ. And so the unity and diversity that will only work and no other will ever work is not that all men are created equally, although that should create some order, but that all men are justified equally. That's the message of the gospel. And so that's what we need to be trumpeting, that God receives people by faith alone, apart from their nationality, apart from all those other secondary things. So the church should really be an attractive place this point in time in the world, where we really do have unity and diversity. But again, it's not, we're not multiracial. Like, you're already ruining the thing when you say that. So that's all I have. I know that's a fire hydrant of a response, but it's hard mentally on me to like see something needs to be said and not say it. So this is my best attempt to try to see what's all being said. So these 10 things: responsibility, hold people accountable; validity, the way everybody's acting just does nothing but prove Christianity; dignity, the reason we hold people responsible, they're made in the image of God, which leads to pity, which should lead to humility. We're not proud standing over people. We're pitying them and feeling like we could be there too. Civility, we can't be absolutely against the cops. Equity, we can't be absolutely for them either. So they have to be held accountable. Sensibility, we need to figure out where this race idea came from and realize there's only ever going to be two races: the race of the old creation and the human race of the new creation that comes from the last Adam. And then keep our sanity in the meantime, not expecting revival to sweep the land and everybody to pray. And I mean, this is what fuels all that foolishness of, like, and not that it's a bad movie, but if you go watch, you know, the War Room movement, like, everybody had a prayer closet after that. And, like, you know, like, people are praying in the movie theater. And it's nothing bad about prayer. It's nothing bad about having a prayer closet. But it's, you see the movements on die down, because everybody bumped into reality. So let's just reckon with reality. New Testament does not teach everything's going to get better. It teaches the opposite. It's going to get worse, and your own family's going to be tossing in the lot that you should die. That's what it says. You'll be hated by all. It don't say it's all going to get good. And through many tribulations, you must enter the kingdom. It's been given to you to suffer. We were destined for this, you know, over and over. How many times did Jesus warn? And he did for that same purpose, because to be forewarned is to be forearmed. He said, "I've told you before it happens, so that when it happens, you'll remember." So that's the mindset to have. Otherwise, when your own family starts hating you and persecuting you, and you know, you fall into this mindset of, like, what did I do wrong? Well, it's the forgotten Beatitudes. You know, blessed are you when all men hate you and falsely accuse you and scorn your name as evil. So, you know, we forget those Beatitudes. It's not always a bad sign. And I'm not commending a kind of foolishness where we just act like idiots to people. But that text means something. And it should look like something at some point in time in your life, if you're living the Christian life. Like, surely at some point in your life, someone's mad at you for following Christ. So that's what Paul says, right? All who desire to live godly, they might suffer, and they will suffer. So, and then of course this diversity. So, anybody want to add anything to that, or have a question, or I may have left something out. I tried not to, but if I did, feel free to add it.
You said in regards to the Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter, you were going to come back to that, did you?
Maybe implicitly I did, but thanks for... So obviously, you know, justice cuts both ways. So like, we want to be concerned to like not have this view that like all policemen are wicked and evil and racist, and but we also don't want to have the other view, you know, that oh, well, it's all hype. There ain't no such thing as racism in the world. Like, they're just acting like that. You know, you could fall into either one of those. Like, the Bible clearly teaches men are wicked. So it's 100% naivety to say, oh, there's no racism going on. So both matter. I mean, justice is what matters, no matter who it's being committed against. And that would really fix it. I think what we're seeing is the result of the worldview in our culture, which is relativism flowing from naturalism and evolution, and it leads to there's no truth. You know, and what that leads to when is might makes right. So the guy who has the gun, you know, if he's a cop and he's shooting the guy unjustly, if truth is treasured, it's going to powerfully impact his conscience. I ought not treat my neighbor this way. Don't matter if I got more power or not. Like, that's powerful. And that changes his behavior. Or the other guy, you know, who's being racist. So what we're seeing is truth no longer is there. And so it don't have that powerful influence. What were you saying, Justin?
I think a good point you made was the noodle coming up. So I think that when these things happen, it's like people get flushed out of the thickets, you know, as far as what their worldview is. There's no better time to talk to an unbelieving friend or family member than like right now, because they're out in the open, they're going to give you an opinion, and it's really easy to turn it back. You know, they're going to trip over themselves. You know, you're going to be acting on like, well, that's not right. And like you said, well, what's your standard of truth that you're basing what's right and what's wrong? So it's really easy to get into a gospel conversation right now. Is one thought I had. I think another thing I was just, this is just totally just me on the way here thinking about it, was I don't know if y'all seen some of the videos, people were like going out in front of interstates and stopping traffic to protest. And so, you know, just in the, you were talking about the psychology of being consistent, that humans are always wanting to look at each other and make sure we're being consistent. I think that, I think there's other injustices that are happening, like human trafficking maybe, that people would probably say is a big issue, but they're not as passionate about it. So if you have a friend or someone that you're trying to get into a conversation with, I really think there's a lot of underlying current other than the police brutality. It's kind of thought I had that it's like when these things happen, it's like something that you poke the balloon and there's just this quick outrage from you know, from certain ethnic groups. And so I think you just got to be sensitive to that, that sometimes it's not, like, I think that if you get into a conversation with somebody, they may not necessarily be upset about what you think they're upset about. Does that make sense? So like,
that's fine. Yeah.
So if
I'm trying to be open and real.
Yeah. So if I just walk around, I think that in where we live, there's just a lot of just pent up frustration in their situation, maybe where they feel like they're working, maybe they feel like where they grew up. And so I think we just got to be mindful of that. That makes sense. Like,
so almost you're saying like their response is not based on some kind of well thought out theory of life, just like an outburst.
Yeah, I don't think the reason why you see people stop in interstates of traffic and throw themselves in front of cars to stop them is because they're completely convinced that that shooting or this shooting was 100% police brutality. I think it's just like they're just frustrated about life. And then when something happens, they just, this is it. Like, you know, the air comes out of the balloon. So so I say that to say, if I'm having a conversation with somebody, you know, you're sitting there going, you know, my view of what happened, I don't think it was really police brutality. You may miss the whole thing, you know, that they're explaining.
Yeah, I think I get that.
Sorry,
35
minutes.
That may very well just be my fault.
We did the same thing. They're like, what was it, 3 years ago, Chick-fil-A? Like, had something to do with the gay rights, I don't know. And everybody was into it. Chick-fil-A was mostly white people. Like I eat Chick-fil-A because I like waffle fries. Like, not because I just like gays. I mean, it was just a line of people, like, protesting gay people.
Because I think the gay, a lot of groups of gays, and they were going to protest Chick-fil-A boycott, this and that, you know, so, and everybody just flooded to Chick-fil-A to show their support for Chick-fil-A, and it's kind of, the whole meme kind of got twisted in the back of that.
Yeah.
It was more out of hate. I mean, Chick-fil-A because I hate gay people.
Right.
It's just like the Target thing, you know, it may just get taken so far out.
Yeah.
I think what Justin was saying was like, I mean, the thing was right on, because everybody, like, I heard Kevin Williams preach a sermon on it, it was just like, everybody having this bitterness inside of them, and it could be like somebody got ticked off because they were unjustly done, and they only got pulled over by a cop. And they feel like this is a good opportunity to vent. You know, somebody got sexually harassed or something by a cop when they were a child. Mm-hmm. This is a good opportunity for them to vent. Now, I think that, the point that you seem like you're trying to make is that, this is a good opportunity to give the gospel a need. Yeah. And this is just actually just kind of exposing their hate or their bitterness or their hurt.
Yeah, it's not always about like what's your angle on the video,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because it doesn't make any sense for that many people to just,
right?
You know, like I've seen the videos of people stopping interstates at traffic. That's crazy. It's like same way.
Yeah, it goes the same thing where we're dealing with Hillary or Trump or whatever issues, pros and cons. Like it's just a simple humanity being exposed right now because we're real to you.
Anything else? Well, we're running about 10 or 15 minutes behind the schedule, so we'll try to, I guess, take as short a break as we can and come back. Just real quick, what's the update on Mercy, Jeremy?